Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I'm joined today by Mike Clay at Mike Clay NFL on Twitter. I've never had Mike on the show before, so very excited to chat with him. Mike, how are you doing today, man?
I'm pretty good. I'm not sure if I should be offended or honored that it's my first time on the show. So anyway, I do appreciate the invite.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm assuming you had a few cancellations and I'm a last minute fill-in, something like that.
Oh, no, never. No, I've actually been meaning to ask you for a while. And now that we are getting close to an NFL season that seems like it's just going to happen. They are going to find a way to have football played this year. So I thought, some great things to talk about with you would be some of the hardest to project situations, because that's your specialty, is working out NFL projections. So I wanted to start with the Chiefs backfield, because you do something interesting with your projections where you are able to kind of split things out by week. And we talked about this on Twitter, right after Clyde Edwards-Helaire got drafted, where you had Damian projected as the lead back for about the first month and then move Clyde Edwards-Helaire into that role. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, out of the gate I did. I just kind of went that direction, because sometimes you have to hedge right out of the gate until you get more information.
Right.
So I do feel a little bit more comfortable with Edwards-Helaire now. But I mean, it's a tough call, and as we'll get into here, there's probably not as much volume in this Chiefs offense, I think, as people realize.
Yeah, because first of all, they are so pass heavy, so the amount of rushing work, but also, that blistering efficiency actually limits the total amount of plays allowed as well, which is something that people don't always tend to think of.
Yeah, exactly. They're a super pass heavy offense, especially last season, and that just doesn't allow a lot of rushing volume. I mean, if you look at it, it's kind of interesting. I mean, I don't know if we fully, acknowledge just how touchdown dependent running backs are in Reed's offense. I mean, if you look back at his history since he joined the Chiefs, running backs in his offense are 31st in carries. 31st in carries out of 32 teams, 23rd in yards, 17th in targets. So not even you imagine his running backs doing so much damage as pass catchers, but they're not even top 12 in receptions or targets. But it's all about touchdowns. They're fourth in rushing touchdowns, they're first in receiving touchdowns, and that's allowed them the sixth most fantasy points. So just consistently year after year, you don't see the volume. Even last year, I mean, Chiefs running backs were 23rd in touches. He has no top 20s in that department since 2013. I mean, even last year, you think about Damian Williams when he was healthy, and even LeSean McCoy for a few weeks there had some fantasy relevance. But, as a whole, that unit was 16th in fantasy points. So just, this offense is so good. But if they do end up splitting this workload, especially early on, I think people are going to be disappointed. And even though I've boosted Edwards-Helaire up, up to kind of the lead back here.
Right.
His round two ADP is too rich for me. And even Damian Williams, he's still going in the sixth round. That's way too early for me. So I don't know. I haven't seen myself getting too many shares. And that's coming from someone who had Edwards-Helaire as his top back before the draft. I really like this kid. But, it's all about ADP. We don't love or hate the players. It's all about the ADP. And right now, his is too rich.
So I do like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and I do like Damian. I wish they were both a little bit less expensive, right? I wish you could get Edwards-Helaire in the third. I wish you could get Damian in the eighth, but that is a little bit more of that's kind of more of an artistic decision as opposed to following, exactly what are in my projections, because my projections are not nearly as high on them. And to your point, people remember that amazing Kareem Hunt season with Kansas City and Mahomes before he got cut. But he had, more than two receptions in only half of his games. He had two games with zero receptions, three games with only one reception. Now, he scored 14 touchdowns in those 11 games, so obviously his fantasy owners were happy with him. But if Damian and Clyde Edwards-Helaire are splitting those touchdowns and not getting that heavy reception work, I mean, it's very likely that owners of both of those players end up being disappointed.
Yeah, no question about it. And that's kind of the problem I have here, right? There's only so much volume and touchdown and production to go to this unit. So if I have Edwards-Helaire at 188 carries right now and 43 catches. So if you're taking him in round two, you're going to hear that and say, you know, even with 10 touchdowns, that's not great. You know, I'd like to get more out of my second round pick, but that only leaves 72. What I have 98 touches for Damian Williams. And he comes in at RB51. And then you have, a few scraps to cover for injuries like, you know, Andre Washington, Darwin Thompson, Darrell Williams, guys like that. But that's just a handful. So there's just where are the touches? You might say, well, maybe they'll get more touches. But history of a read offense is that's not going to be the case, right? They're going to get the ball to Kelce and Tyreek Hill. And then you have the secondary wide receivers will get some. Not to mention, by the way, that Reed's offenses don't run many plays. They're highly efficient, but they don't run a lot of plays either. So it's just a lot of things that kind of tell us, and this is, again, why I like to do projections, is because you see these things on the wall that tell you it's going to be hard for people, you know, for these players to match up with expectations.
Yeah, well, and while we are talking about the Chiefs, what is your current position on Mecole Hardman? You know, he's kind of one of those lightning rod guys that, depending on how you project playing time between him and Sammy Watkins, you know, either Hardman seems like a value because of the efficiency you can project on him, or, you know, he's a clear overdraft because he's just never going to get the volume to justify where he's going.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've been way off of Hardman for the most part this offseason, just because, though I do see the upside, he's a second-round talent, there's pedigree, there's breakout upside if he wins that two job. But, you know, the more and more work you do on this offense, you realize secondary receivers also have a hard time succeeding. And you know, they brought back Sammy Watkins. I don't think you do that and pay him that much if he's not going to play at all. So Hardman does have an uphill battle. So for an eighth-round pick with as deep as that position is right now, not to mention that if you follow kind of the script a lot of people have gone with get the running back early, then attack wide receiver for a while, maybe you sneak a tight end in there. You know, around that time, you're usually looking at the stable of essentially zero running back candidates, which I know we're going to talk about later on. And maybe you don't want to pull the trigger on yet another receiver. You might not want to start early in the season at that point. Now, that said, he's going in the eighth round over the past week. I just did the FSGA draft, our big annual draft that we have with 14 teams. And I almost spit out my drink in the 10th round when I noticed he was still sitting there. So in a 14-teamer in round 10, I thought that was a really good value. So it really all depends where he's falling in your drafts. If you can get him late like that, he's worth it for the upside because you already filled out your starting lineup. You can put him on your bench early on and then hope that he becomes a value at some point during the season. But in the eighth round of 12-teamers, it's a little rich for me.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, he is kind of one of those classic. You'd rather have him in best ball than in redraft, where you actually have to choose to start him. I mean, people definitely say that far too often. He's actually one of those guys that I think that it is probably true. Okay, another situation that is giving a lot of people fits is the Green Bay Packers run pass splits, because they basically said this whole offseason, you know, we want to become more run heavy. They draft A.J. Dillon. They draft Josiah DeGuerra. They don't really address their wide receiver issues, you know, pretty much at all. You know, they added Devin Funchess to that position. So are you kind of regressing them more as a run heavy team now?
More so than we're used to from an Aaron Rodgers offense. I mean, they've been one of the pass heaviest offenses in the league during the Rodgers/Mike McCarthy era. And kind of on a side note, it's going to be intriguing to see if McCarthy throws the ball a ton in Dallas, right? We haven't seen them be a pass heavy offense since the Jason Garrett play calling years, which was quite a while ago. So that's going to be interesting. But anyway, I do think that LaFleur is going to try to balance out, if not run the ball more. But here's the thing. Last year, you know, they won a lot of football games, and they were probably fortunate to be ahead as often as they were. They definitely had a misleading win-loss record, and we see that each and every year, and those teams almost always regress a little bit or a lot of it in a lot of cases. So that those two things could offset, right? They may want to run the ball more, but they're going to be more competitive. They're going to be behind right. more often, and they're going to have to throw the ball in the second half more often than they did last season. So I think those things will kind of offset. When all is said and done, I have them projected at 61% pass rate. And so I, you know, it's kind of league average, basically. They're going to be right around league average, maybe a tiny bit below. That's how I have it kind of projected out.
Yeah, that is right where I have them. But, you know, there are a couple other interesting quirks with projecting them. So first is, you know, projecting the efficiency for that offense, you know, yards per play, yards per pass attempt and stuff. And I've moved that back more towards league average, you know, as Aaron Rodgers has struggled to, you know, be efficient with his passes and, you know, really targets Davante Adams a lot. But for fantasy football purposes, what's more important is, you know, who is second in line for targets there? Is it Alan Lazard? Is it Devin Funchess? You know, are they going to turn Jay Sternberger into a full-time starter? How are you aligning that right now?
Yeah, it's funny. There's a lot of Jay Sternberger hype, and I feel like
a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I feel like a lot of people were anti Jimmy Graham when he went there because, hey, Aaron Rodgers doesn't use a tight end, but now Jace is the new, you know, how we love, you know, young guys and breakout yeah. players. So now everyone's on Jay Sternberger for some reason. I'm not there. Like, I'm happy to stash him in Dynasty, and I think he's an interesting prospect, but he's 25th in my projections. I mean, we think this is going to be a balanced offense, or they're going to run it more. And then you think about Rodgers' history with the tight end position. I you know, I have a hard time finding a generous projection for him. And so I'm right around 40 catches, 430 yards, 3 touchdowns for him. I'm fine with that. I mean, obviously, like everyone else, I'm no different. I love Davante Adams, top 2 wide receiver. I still have Thomas ahead, by the way. I'm not jumping the Adams as the number
yeah,
one.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I think that's a little over the top. But anyway, I do have him at 2. After that, I'll take a late stab on a Funchess, maybe a Lazard. I found that when he's coming off the board, I'm not interested yet. So I haven't really gotten much of him in round 14, but I have him and Funchess basically grouped together, and Funchess is going undrafted or in the, you know, the 20th round of best ball. So I'm fine with either guy, but I'll tell you what, really from this offense, the guy I've gotten the most is Aaron Jones, right? You know, again, we're all about that next big thing, and
right.
I feel like we're forgetting about him a little bit. You know, he's still going to play a huge role as a pass catcher. Again, we're talking about how they want to run the ball more. He's been super efficient. He's going to get plenty of touchdown opportunities. He had a ton of them last year, even if he was over his head. And suddenly he's going in round 2 behind guys like Kenyon Drake and Nick Chubb, who has Kareem Hunt there, and Joe Mixon and Miles Sanders. I have Jones ahead of all of those guys, so I'm still very happy to get him in round 2.
Yeah, I mean, if they play Jones in a very similar way to the way they played him last year, where he gets used as a pass catcher and A.J. Dillon doesn't, you know, infringe on a ton of that goal line work, I think it's pretty easy to see, especially if the Packers are being honest about this run-heavy approach, I think it's very easy to see him earning back end of the first round value, and he's going to be one of those guys who is present on a ton of league winning teams. Like, we go back and do our analysis after the season and look at win rates, and I could see Aaron Jones being like a very high win rate player.
Yeah, no question about it. And it's not like I have him with an enormous touch load here, right? I mean, I have him at a little over 200 carries and 44 catches, and that's still enough with the decent touchdown total to get to RB8. So the guy is just really good at football. He's still only 25 years old. And, you know, by the way, recent history, and again, I think maybe we'll get into this at some point a little bit, but day 2 running backs do not produce as rookies. It's very rare. Like, you can pick up exceptions, right? Occasionally they pop up and have a big season, and it's easy to list those guys off. But what about all of the other day 2 running backs that have done basically nothing? So, you know, A.J. Dillon, a round 2 pick. And, you know, I believe it's 6 out of the last 28 round 2 running backs have been top 28 at the position. Top 28, 6 out of 28, I believe is the number. So I'm not too worried about Dillon. I think he'll chip in here or there, but I'm not worried about a big role unless Jones goes down.
So are you lower than the market on Cam Akers? He is one of all the day 2 running backs, you know, Jonathan Taylor, DeAndre Swift, Cam Akers is the one day 2 guy that I am really in on.
Round five, I'm fine with it. You know, DeAndre Swift's going in round five. Jonathan Taylor's going in round three. That's too early for me. But once we get into that round five vicinity, I'm fine with it. But, and I don't want to spoil something we're going to talk about later with zero running backs, but, you know, zero running back options. We're going to get to that later. But there's the other back in that backfield, Darrell Henderson, who I want to get into. He's going six rounds after Cam Akers. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a toss-up on who's going to be the lead back.
Who's going to be the lead back?
You know who I like is the value in that backfield.
Okay, very, very topical question here. The Cam Newton rushing rate in New England. You know, last year we saw him. They played. He started two games for Carolina before he had to leave with injury. He had one scramble in those two games, and very famously, that that Thursday night game against Tampa Bay, they're there, fourth and one, and they call the swing play for McCaffrey on the goal line to potentially win the game instead of rushing with Cam Newton. But, you know, at the same time, he is not going to have played football for, you know, 10 months and seems to be fully healthy. So how do we project his rushing rate in New England?
You know what, I have it down a bit in terms of designed runs, but I still think he'll be used in that capacity plenty. I still think he'll be used as, you know, to sneak the ball, obviously. He usually does that about, you know, 8 to 10 times a season. We'll see a few of those at the goal line. And I don't think his scrambling is going to drop massively by any means, right? If he's healthy and ready to go, he'll scramble. And you might be wondering, well, he's near 30, did he stop scrambling? And the answer is not really. I mean, early in his career, he definitely scrambled a lot. He was, you know, right around 30-32% in terms of how often or what percentage of his carries were scrambles. And that number started to drop in 2015 and reached a career low in 2016. But then it really bounced back in 2017 and 2018. In fact, in 2018, he was at 27%, which was, you know, closer to where he was earlier in his career. So I haven't seen anything that is super alarming. I have him right around 80 carries, and that assumes 14 starts for him this season. And so I still think he'll be among the league leaders in rushing production. Maybe not, you know, Josh Allen, maybe not Kyler Murray or Deshaun Watson, maybe a little behind those guys, but I still think that'll be a valuable asset in fantasy.
Yeah, that's almost exactly what I have him for. I have him for 70 rushing attempts in 14 games, but with, you know, obviously a good share of the touchdowns, because we expect that he probably will, you know, very similar to how they use him in Carolina, get some of, like, his touchdown rate per carry should be higher than, you know, the average running back. Another hot button topic, the target share between Juju Smith-Schuster and Deontay Johnson. You know, some people are ready to anoint Johnson as the better value. I have to say, throughout my drafts this offseason, I have taken Smith-Schuster in the fourth round a bunch, and I do not feel particularly tempted by Johnson at his current cost. But I am very open to being wrong about that, because even when Smith-Schuster was playing last year, his target share was not what I expected, even with those bad quarterbacks.
Yeah, this is one of those rare situations where I've essentially ignored last season, right? I mean, the Steelers were averaging right around one touchdown per game in the second half. It is a miracle that they were even in contention to make the playoffs. It just shows you how good that defense was, because that offense was just total throwaway. It was atrocious, and I don't know if we could really learn anything from it. I mean, if you look at the target shares from week 12 on, we'll say, Deontay Johnson was at 30%, which is a huge number, but James Washington was at 24% too. I mean, he was also playing a huge role, not to mention that when Juju came back healthy in that week 17 game, he had a 30% share as well, right? So I don't know if there's a ton to learn. I mean, here's where I am. I at Juju, I have a 22%. That's enough to put him as a in this high volume, pass heavy, high scoring offense with Big Ben back. It's enough to put him in that top 12 conversation. Deontay Johnson, I'm at 18%. And then Washington and Claypool, who there's some debate over who's going to be the three there. I have Washington at 11 and Claypool at 9. So those guys are kind of, you know, late flyers. Whoever wins that job could be a sleeper for sure. But Juju, I haven't found myself getting him a lot. Round 3 is fine, I guess. No big qualms with that. Obviously, his first two seasons were tremendous. He's still super young. I like the talent a lot. And Deontay, I'm with you. He's a little rich for me in the seventh of recent drafts. He's 39th on my board.
Yeah, it just, I tend to think that last season just has to be a wash for the Steelers. And there's another player for the Steelers who, I mean, James Conner was going in the back end of the first round last year, and they drafted Anthony McFarland in the fourth round. But as we just discussed, you know, day two running backs tend to not produce that often, not play that often as rookies. And, you know, they tried the Jalen Samuels experiment, which was actually kind of a worry for James Conner last year. And he had that one game where they used him as kind of like that wildcat quarterback. And after that, he had a knee injury and really was not productive. And the coaching staff has now talked about Benny Snell as just like a straight up replacement for James Conner. So, you know, I could see myself at the end of the year, you know, we get to September 10th or whenever the season is supposed to start. And just like two of my biggest needs for the season end up being Smith-Schuster and James Conner, because, you know, if Big Ben plays 16 healthy games, I don't think there's an argument for these guys. Like, they're going to be huge values.
Yeah, no question. I mean, we know they love 11, so the receiver is going to be a huge part of this passing game as usual. And if you think back at the past decade in fantasy, I mean, how many teams have had three fantasy starters, essentially? Let's say three top 36 fantasy receivers in a single season. Well, I don't have the number eight in front of me, but I know the Steelers are near the top of that list. I specifically remember one season where Jericho Cotchery was a top 36 receiver. I believe he had 10 touchdowns when you're late in his career. I believe Nate Washington snuck in there one time. So they've definitely been really, really good to that position. And the last time we saw Big Ben for a full season was Randy Feitner's first year as their play caller, and they were by far the pass heaviest team in the NFL. I mean, Big Ben, I don't think people realize this. The year Patrick Mahomes broke out and won the MVP, Big Ben led the NFL in passing yards that year. I mean, the guy was flinging it all over the place. So there's definitely a lot of value potentially to be had at the receiver position once it sorts itself out. And at running back, I'm with you. It is a tough call. You know, Connor, and I don't feel great drafting Connor. He's almost in that kind of that girly David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell sort of territory for me. But I'm fine with one of my last picks throwing a dart at McFarland. Again, super cheap, right? We're not talking about round three or five. So even though he's a running back, or, you know, drafted outside of round one, I'm fine with that. And same thing with a guy like Benny Snow.
So I definitely like Connor more than Le'Veon Bell, more than Todd Gurley, more than David Johnson, because I don't really have many concerns about his ability to perform actually on the field. And I have efficiency concerns about all of those guys. But specifically for Todd Gurley, I have concerns about his passing down role, because the Rams went from, you know, really using him as a part of their passing offense to, I think he only had 49 targets in 15 games last season. And it seems like something with his knees, you know, his ability to move up the field and cut laterally really, you know, was concerning to the Rams coaches about using him in that passing role. So how do you have the running back work split in Atlanta between Ito Smith, Brian Hill, and Todd Gurley? You know, do you have Gurley still as a bona fide workhorse?
Yeah, I essentially do. I'm not really afraid of Ito Smith yet. I need to see more from him. Remember, his first year in the league back in 2018, he was a fourth round pick, and he mixed in quite a bit. I think he played well over 100 touches. But the efficiency there was really bad. I mean, he had the second worst yards per reception for a running back, the fifth worst yards per target. His yards per carry was 3.5. I mean, I know we don't want to get too caught up in yards per carry, but he was not a super efficient rusher either, obviously on the small side. So you're not going to get a ton out of there in terms of expectations. And last year, you know, he looked a little bit better last year, but, you know, he had 33 touches last season before he went down with the injury. So it's hard to take too much away from that. So I'll be honest. I mean, that's one of the struggles with Gurley, is he's going to a new team here on a 1-year deal. It's a very productive dirt cutter offense here in Atlanta, and I just don't really see a competition right here. I'm not really afraid of Smith. You know, you have Wallace in there, Brian Hill. I mean, these guys they didn't really threaten Devonta Freeman. I don't think they're going to threaten Todd Gurley either out of the gate. But on the other hand, you know, you worry about the terrible efficiency with Gurley, the injury, the recent injury history. He's going to be 26 now, which for a running back is getting up there a little bit. So Not to mention that Dirk Cutter's offense kind of flows around the passing game too, which is something else we need to consider here. So I'm doing my best to stay away from Gurley in drafts. But it's not really Ito Smith that's the reason. It's just I'm scared of the
guy.
Yeah,
it's Gurley.
Right. Luckily, he's going in round three, so it's easy to pass on him.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So this is maybe more a little bit of a structural question, but I can see a lot of different arguments for projecting the New York Jets in different ways. Obviously, their team-wide efficiency last year was terrible, but there were a couple spots that you could point to. You know, Darnold against bad defenses. I think he had 4 touchdowns against the Raiders and in one other game. And, you know, obviously they had Luke Falk in there, and then Darnold played some of those games immediately. Maybe he wasn't quite ready to come back from having mono. He's still super young. So, you know, and it's sometimes it is reasonable to project younger players to have better efficiency, you know, in their 3rd or 4th seasons in the league, because theoretically they should be entering into some kind of, you know, athletic prime. They should be getting a little bit better. So also the target tree in New York, you know, Jameson Crowder, Breshad Perriman, and Denzel Mims are all double-digit round selections, and one of them certainly could get, you know, 130 targets if things happen to break their way. So kind of how are you approaching the New York Jets this year?
Yeah, it's not an offense I'm too fired up about. I'm trying to stay away from Bell. I tweeted something yesterday. I don't know if you saw that that tweet the guy put out, which was like the most shocking stat you've seen in sports, something like that.
I saw that one. The one that blew my mind the most was the Wayne Gretzky one, that if he had never scored a goal ever, he'd still lead the NHL in points forever. That blew my mind more than any of them. Isn't that crazy?
That is ridiculous. And there's been a lot of good ones too, for sure. Pete Burns, at Pete Burns ESPN, I think it is. He tweeted out, "What's your favorite random sports stat that blows your mind?" And I went with 11 different NFL players carried the ball inside the opponent's 5-yard line at least 12 times last season. Adam Gase's running backs have a total of 11 inside the 5 over the past 3 seasons combined. The guy his offenses don't score, and he does not run the ball at the goal line. So that worries me about a guy like Le'Veon Bell and, obviously Sam Darnold, who you just brought up. You know, he's had efficiency issues so far, some health issues as well. Doesn't have much value with his leg. So I definitely have some concerns there, because I did like him coming into the league. It's obviously a big season for him. But, you know, other than that, though, I'll tell you what. I don't think that the pass catchers here are so overpriced that they're bad values. I mean, Gase does the 11 personnel package, right? So he's going to have 3 receivers on the field a lot. Jameson Crowder is very inexpensive in round 8. I like him a lot. He was wide receiver 26 last year. Gase's recent history shows a lot of touchdowns for the slot position. And even if Crowder was over his head in that department last year, which he was, he still could easily get into the 4-6 touchdown range. So I like him. And then Breshad Perriman, Denzel Mims, super cheap. You know, you can get them in the later rounds, 12th round for Perriman, 16th for Mims. And then I do, and again, I'm foreshadowing a little bit here, but I do like Chris Herndon a little bit as a flyer, and he's going late. So that's kind of the thing here. As much as I don't like the Gase offense, and I definitely have some concerns about Gase and Bell, the rest of the, you know, the pass catchers are very inexpensive, so I don't really mind them at their ADPs.
Yeah, no, I don't mind them either. I find that Perriman ends up being the one that I like, but I like Herndon as well. You know, a guy who just was snake bitten last year. He had the suspension, and then he was injured, and it basically just never happened for him. So that's actually a good transition. So we can go to our late round tight end group, the guys that are popular in this conversation: Mike Gesicki, Noah Fant, Tyler Higbee, who was all the rage on Twitter 2 days ago now, TJ Hawkinson, Blake Jarwin. Who is the Mike Clay favorite out of this group?
Yeah, and well, here, I'm going to answer this question, and actually I have 2 guys I like a lot. I just mentioned one, but here's how I'm going to answer this. I'm going to list off a stat for you. These are the 10 best yards per target marks by a rookie tight end since 2007. Guys with at least 40 targets, okay? The 10 best since 2007 in yards per target. Mark Andrews, hey, he's pretty good. Rob Gronkowski, well, I'm told he's good too. Hunter Henry, he's panned out when he's healthy. 4th on the list, Chris Herndon. That's interesting. Noah Fant is fifth. Then Aaron Hernandez, Zach Ertz, Jordan Reed, Jimmy Graham, George Kittle. I mean, come on.
So basically all guys who were fantasy starters or elite?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much all these guys at one point or another were a superstar in fantasy other than, you know, I guess we can't go there with Henry yet, although he's been a mid-range tight end one. But everyone else has had their opportunity to be a superstar in fantasy. So the exceptions there otherwise are guys who haven't really broken out yet. That's Chris Herndon and Noah Fant, who are fourth and fifth. So that is interesting, and I can't wait to see if this is a little fluky, which I don't think it is, or if it kind of projects forward. So Herndon and Fant are my answer. It's not just because of that. Obviously, Fant has first-round pedigree. He looked the part last year. You know, you have Drew Lock, who showed some flashes a little bit last year. I mean, I'm a little worried about them being a run-first offense, and they added some personnel at receiver, but I think he's going to be a featured part of that offense. Was tight end 16 as a rookie, and that's very, very good for a rookie tight end. You just don't really see finishes like that. So him, and then, of course, Herndon, rookie season efficiency was terrific. He's a, you know, I think he's just a good player and has an opportunity to see a generous target share in this Jets offense. But again, the concern with Herndon, the bad news is it's an Adam Gase offense. The good news is he's going in the 14th round, so you can throw that dart very cheap.
So do you agree that, well, I guess there are really two different ways to think of Tyler Higbee. Some people are just totally buy that, you know, what, five game sample from last year where he seemed like he was, you know, maybe one of the, you know, maybe one of the best tight ends in the league? Or do you value, you know, that 5 year sample or 4 year sample we had before of him being completely replacement level? I don't think I have selected him once in a draft thus far, but obviously someone is selecting him for his ADP to be where it is.
Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't got him much either, and that surprises me because I'm, and again, I may be totally wrong on this, but I've kind of rolled my eyes at the anti-Higbee attacks on social media that I've seen lately because I'm buying in a little bit. I'm buying in. I mean, it wasn't completely random. Like, I know the schedule is pretty easy for the Rams against tight ends down the stretch, and we don't want to ignore that at all, but it's not like his numbers were decent during that stretch. He was by far the number one fantasy tight end. It was every single week he was just putting up production. And the other part of it is that we saw a shift from Sean McVay, right? I mean, he's been at the top of the league in three wide sets since he took over as head coach for the Rams, and that stopped in the second half last season. He was still above average, but it was more, you know, evened out. So you could see Higbee on the field with Gerald Everett, and if that's the case, you know, you're not going to have a third wide receiver taking up a generous target there. You're going to see more of them targets go to the tight end position. I think Tyler Higbee has earned the opportunity to be that go-to tight end. Gerald Everett has not yet. You know, he just has not emerged like they wanted him to, and Higbee has. He certainly did in the down the stretch last season. And by the way, one other thing here, this is the worst the Rams have been a wide receiver in terms of depth since they got there. Right?
Yes.
I mean, you have the big two right now. You were used to having a big three. You have Woods and Kupp. Then it's Reynolds, who played a lot. He was playing as much as Cooper Kupp, if not more, in that final month last season, but just wasn't targeted. You know, his target shares of 10%, 0, 8, 8, 2. You know, he just wasn't being targeted. And then Van Jefferson's a day two rookie, so we don't know what to get out of him. So I think Higbee is fine to be in the 15 to 17% target share range, which is well below where he was late last season. He was 28% the final 5 weeks last season. And I think that's enough. It doesn't take a lot to be a top 10 fantasy tight end. I think he gets it done.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly would be impressive. Maybe I will revise my stance and take a closer look at it. Though one of the reasons why I don't feel incentivized is that I really like Mike Gesicki. I think there's a pretty clear role there for him. I expect them to be a pass heavy team, you know, in a lot of positive passing game scripts. And outside of Devontae Parker, you know, I think Gesicki is going to earn, I think it's likely that he can earn a larger target share than Preston Williams, you know, than any of their running backs, you know, obviously than Matt Breida, Jordan Howard, or Patrick Laird. So, you know, like I think like a 120 target season for Gesicki is totally in the range of outcomes.
Interesting. I'm wondering now, I have a question for you. What are you thinking about Chan Gailey then? Like, I know that they're not going to disregard Gesicki. You know, he's not going to disappear, yeah. But Gailey hates the tight end. I mean, you look at his five seasons with the Jets and Bills as a as the play caller, the total in five seasons for his tight ends was 145 catches and 16 touchdowns, a little over 1,500 yards. That's the total for five seasons. So I don't think Gesicki goes like 2019 O.J. Howard here, right? I don't think it's going to be that bad.
Right.
I think he could cost him 10% or 20% of his production. So for me, I'm nervous. I have him at 80 targets and tight end 17 on my board. I'm just this Gailey offense is not something I want to ignore.
So I have him for 112 targets, 715 yards, which I think is roughly reasonable if you expect that they kind of deploy him like a wide receiver, right? So he plays in the slot a lot. He gets some of those outside slot snaps that the really good tight ends get. And maybe that doesn't happen. You know, they're probably going to carry six wide receivers. You know, maybe Albert Wilson is healthy. Maybe they get more out of Isaiah Ford, you know, maybe. And it's also probably a little bit of hedge on Preston Williams not being fully recovered from his ACL tear, but I guess maybe I am being a little bit optimistic in this projection. Another thing, though, is with football becoming, you know, so much more pass heavy and, you know, more pressure coming on these coaches from analytics departments inside the teams, I think there's going to be a little bit less of, you know, we just don't really use that position from head coaches and offensive coordinators. Like, I think that with all of the cooks in the kitchen and how offenses are built now, I think specific tendencies like Chan Gailey's become a little bit less important for fantasy football. That could be wrong, but that is kind of my hypothesis.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, about half the time he lined up a receiver last year, so you could be totally right. They could just decide to make him essentially a wide receiver in this offense, and that wouldn't be crazy by any means. But again, we've been fooled by this before, where we're looking at talent. Like, I was all in on O.J. Howard, so maybe I'm a little stung by that from last year. I thought, look, I know Arians has passed, but, you know, O.J. Howard is in his third year, yards per target leader 2 years in a row. There's no way he's not going to bust out this year. He just seems so safe, and then look what happened. It was a total disaster. So that's what makes me a little bit nervous, but I hear you. I hear you. I mean, he did average over seven targets a game in the second half last season to Gesicki, and there's a lot of pedigree there. Third year, you know, going on 25 years old. There are a lot of things you want to like, but I'm definitely nervous about it. And again, you know, there's a reason we're talking about this. There's a lot of options in that area of drafts, and I just prefer the other guys. It's really that simple. Fan, Hockenson, you know, Hayden Hurst. I have Gesicki and Herndon together, so those guys are pretty close. So just a lot of options in that part of the draft.
For sure. All right, my favorite topic, near and dear to my heart, favorite zero RB targets. You know, I think Everyone accepts that Tony Pollard is the guy. I think many people accept Chase Edmonds is, you know, likely a very good zero RB target. Latavius Murray, if anything happens to Alvin Kamara, he's, you know, he just is going to be the guy there. They give him pretty much 80% of the work. You should have some good insight on the Eagles organization. Do you think that Boston Scott meets this criteria? Because some people are, Pat Corain from Established Run, who comes on this show, is a big Boston Scott guy and has gotten me to take a couple closer looks at him, and was really used in the passing game last year, even while Miles Sanders was also getting used. So who were some of your favorite zero running back targets, and is Boston Scott one of them?
Yeah, I mean, right now, Scott is in my top 40 running backs, but that's with 126 carries and 31 catches. If they add a bigger back, he's going to take some of those carries, and it's going to knock Scott down a little bit. Now, I do love the talent. First of all, shout out to PFF, because I don't think anyone mentioned him before them. I mean, they kind of found him, and then I dug into him before that draft, and the efficiency was off the charts. I've been a big fan ever since they kind of put him on the map, if you will, kind of under the radar. So love Scott's talent. But again, I think if they bring in a Devontae Freeman or something like that, that could be pretty costly for Boston Scott's playing time. Keep in mind, both he and Miles Sanders saw a gigantic, gigantic boost in targets in that final month last season, but they had no one else to throw to. There was a reason why that was happening, and that kind of applies to Dallas Goedert as well. If they have a healthy DeSean Jackson and Jalen Reagor, and eventually maybe Alshon Jeffrey, maybe we'll see. That could be pretty costly for the target share, some guys like Goddard and the running back. So keep that in mind. But as for other guys, I mean, look, I, I would say you listed some handcuffs, and I love those guys. No question about it. If it's a high ceiling handcuff, I'm all for it. No question about it. But if I am going zero running back and I'm just kind of weak at that position, you know, I'm probably going to lean a little harder, at least in the middle rounds, towards guys who I think could get to a huge role with perhaps without an injury. So one of those guys I mentioned earlier is Darrell Henderson, right? I think if he came out and after a month of the season, we're like, wow, this guy is really good. He's getting targets out of the backfield. He's has an edge on Akers for carries. He's, an emerging star in this league. We shouldn't really be surprised, right?
I mean, yeah, wouldn't be out of nowhere or anything.
Right. I mean, the guy averaged almost 9 yards per carry back-to-back seasons in college. I mean, you know, we're not five, nine. I mean, the guy had a ton of support last year. He was way overdrafted in the middle round, you know, what's round six or five last year at times. It was out of control, the hype for him, and everyone's kind of forgotten about him and moved on to Cam Akers. But I would not be shocked at all if he broke out. So round 11, I'm looking at him. My favorite player in this draft, and I think, you know, I've had some success. I've had plenty of failures, but had some success with sleeper running backs coming into the league in recent history. Jordan Howard, Chris Carson, like guys like that. I loved Kareem Hunt as a player coming in, which, I mean, he was a popular name, so, you know, to each his own. But Zach Moss is my guy this year, right? I love Zach Moss. I think that, you know, I just talked down day two running backs, but I just love the talent there. And it would not be surprising at all if he emerged as a very effective rusher. So I like him in round 10. Damian Harris is another one I'm looking at to going even deeper into the draft. Yeah, again, it's Bill Belichick. Would anyone be shocked if Damian Harris leads their backfield in touches this season? I think that he's a really good one as well. The secondary Chargers backs, Josh Kelly and Justin Jackson, I think are excellent.
Yeah, those guys I think have real because if one of them beats out the other, you know, if Justin Jackson or Josh Kelly beats out the other one, and there's a Melvin Gordon sized role left, because yeah. It seems unlikely that Austin Eckler is going to turn into, you know, all like he becomes like a 300 touch running back. Like, I don't even know if they would want that. Right. Like I think we can say that that's probably not the Chargers' plan.
Yeah, I agree 100%. In fact, I have Eckler as a top 10 fantasy back in PPR, but I'm with only 162 carries and 64 catches, right? So I'm scaling him back from last year, but that's still enough to be a star in fantasy and pay off his ADP. So I'm with you. There's still plenty of touches to go around. So I'm happy to take a flyer on either one of those guys and just see which one of them emerges into that role and perhaps steal some touchdowns and, you know, maybe 8 to 10 touches a game. So not to mention that the handcuff appeal there if something happens to Eckler. So that's pretty much my list. The other guy I mentioned, though, that's, you know, he has a lower ceiling than some of these other guys should they be positioned as a starter, but Tariq Cohen, you know, he is very almost no competition in that Bears backfield for passing down work, right? David Montgomery is going to handle most of the carries, but Cohen could easily reach 80 catches. You know, he's been had a huge workload, and it's really just Montgomery and Cohen in that backfield. And by the way, his efficiency was really bad last year, and that makes me a little nervous, but it didn't make the Bears nervous because they didn't invest in anyone else. So I think he has a very high floor. So if I'm waiting a long time in round 8, if I can get a flex option in PPR or a guy that can flirt with RB2 numbers, if not more, then I'm happy to scoop him up.
Well, that's the thing with Cohen that's so interesting is the Bears do target him down the field. He was really unlucky on those receptions last year, and in 2018 he was super lucky on them, you know, had a bunch of 30 plus yard catches, had a 70 yard touchdown, had some long rushing touchdowns. And Cohen is the sort of player, you know, with his speed and how he, you know, approaches just running with the football, like he's going to open himself up to that variance because, you know, he's not really trying to break tackles. He's trying to like find running lanes. You know, he's trying to find the home run. And just with kind of a lucky efficiency season, you know, 3 or 4 long touchdowns that would have been, you know, 10 yard gains in 2019, like all of a sudden Cohen becomes this huge value just off of like literally like 5 or 6 efficient plays.
Yeah, no question. And he's, again, he has 71 catches and 79 catches over the past 2 years, top 6 in receptions both years. So at the very minimum, you spent a mid round pick and got a high floor guy to throw into your flex spot sometimes. You know, again, lacks some ceiling for sure, but I'm happy to take that in the middle rounds, especially if it's a little bit of a deeper league or, you know, again, I waited at that position. I'm going to throw a ton of darts and I want a guy to throw in my RB2 spot early on in the season.
So there's this trend right now, you know, this conversation about quarterbacks that this year is actually a year to draft a mid-round quarterback. Kyler Murray, Dak Prescott, Deshaun Watson, Josh Allen, Russell Wilson, because these are the guys who run. And what we've had in the past is we've had run-heavy quarterbacks who were not adding passing efficiency, you know, not adding 30-plus touchdowns passing. And now we have that. You know, Kyler is going to throw a bunch of times and run. Dak is going to add, you know, his let's say, you know, 45, 50 fantasy points with his legs, but also play in a super efficient passing offense. Same for Deshaun Watson, same for Russell Wilson. And that's kind of led to mid-round QB being a more popular strategy than straight-up late-round quarterback. And I'm wondering if you have a particular guy who you feel is actually a strong late-round quarterback breakout, you know, who could finish top five, top six at the position. For me, the one name is Daniel Jones, but obviously he has just such a wide range of outcomes because, well, you know, he's like not very good in terms of efficiency and turnovers.
Yeah, he definitely wasn't last year, but I like his kind of, you know, that YOLO attitude from a quarterback.
Yes.
Not to mention, by the way, that he was in and out of the lineup, right? He didn't start right away. Then he had an injury. And the other thing, too, is that if you look at Saquon, and this doesn't even include Jones. So let's just say Saquon Barkley, the three receivers, Shepard, Slayton, and Tate, and Evan Ingram, they played zero games together last season. And yet the Giants were just outside the top 10 in touchdowns per game. I mean, now they're all going to be healthy, you know, hopefully for their sake, and you're going to have Jones as the starter for the first time. He's entering his second season. He had some value with his legs. Definitely, he's on the top of the list. But, again, he seems a little – I think a lot of people would pick him, right? He's kind of the popular name right now. But it's kind of interesting. A lot of the guys I picked have been kind of seasoned veterans who I think are undervalued. Like Tom Brady is a guy I'm getting in, like, every draft. I have him seventh on my board. He's going to the 11th round. So, you know – That's kind of been one of my top targets. But if I'm going deeper, like if I'm going to go very late round, like I wait forever, I'm going to just throw a Hail Mary at somebody. How about Gardner Minshew? You know, again, speaking of someone who struggled with efficiency as a rookie, but I mean, he's going to be the starter for Jacksonville. Their defense is really bad. They're going to have to throw it a lot. And he adds a lot of value with his legs. You know, he appeared in 14 games. He had 67 carries for 344 yards. That was fifth most in rushing yards. And also, again, I kind of discovered this. I knew you wanted to talk about some quarterback flyers. So I was looking at his numbers a little bit. Gardner Minshew, overall, not just including the weeks he played, for the whole season, he led the NFL in scrambles. He had 50 scrambles last year. That was most in the entire league. So, could he take a second-year leap? You know, is the supporting cast going to be a little better? You have DJ Chark there. Obviously, they added Chenault in round two to help out as a playmaker. Tyler Eifert actually stayed healthy last season. They had him at tight end. And again, the defense is so bad, especially if they trade Yannick. They're going to have some serious problems on that side of the ball. So, you know, again, we're talking late flyer. You know, maybe he comes out of nowhere and explodes onto the scene this year. But I think Minshew's an interesting one.
Yeah, I like Minshew a lot, especially because his stacking options, you know, Shark obviously is this super high ceiling player, but there are, you know, Chenault and, you know, all of the tight ends, D.D. Westbrook, like these guys are straight up free. You can, you know, basically outside of DJ Shark, you can get whoever you want as one of your last picks before you take kickers and defenses, which leads us to our last little topic here. Our favorite quarterback wide receiver stacks, you know, at their cost in large field tournaments like the FFPC main event, like the Scott Fishbowl, you know, these leagues that are really going to value the correlation of those, you know, of the quarterback and the wide receiver.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did touch on a few of these, so I'll keep them quiet or keep them tight here, but I have four that kind of jumped into my head. So if I take Mike Evans or Chris Godwin early on, which is always a possibility, especially Evans, who's been falling a little bit, I'm happy to get Tom Brady, who I just mentioned. The Brady-Evans stack or Brady-Godwin stack, I think is fantastic in this Bruce Arians offense. I mean, we know Brady's going to go vertical more often, right? It's been a decade-plus characteristic of Arians' offense. I don't think that's changing this year when it hasn't changed in, what, four different cities, you know, Pittsburgh, Arizona, Indy, and now Tampa Bay. So I expect that to be the popular one that I have. Not to mention you can get Keyshawn Vaughn or Ronald Jones pretty cheap to throw in there, and Rob Gronkowski's going in the 10th round. So you could do a lot of damage, shockingly, with this Buccaneers offense. Denver, Drew Lock, I almost mentioned him as a breakout late flyer. I have him as my extremely, let me make sure I make this clear, extremely deep sleeper at the for an NFL MVP, Drew Lock in Denver. That defense, I think, is going to be really good. If the Broncos go 12-4, something behind that defense, and Lock takes a big step forward in his second season, who knows? You know, he could be in that conversation. So he's a very deep sleeper there. But Corlin Sutton's undervalued. We talked about Noah Fant. I like that trio. We just talked about the Giants, obviously Daniel Jones, and any of their receivers. They're all pretty cheap, especially Shepard and Golden Tate, not to mention Evan Ingram's a possibility there. And I'll give you one more quick, Carson Wentz, with Zach Ertz, who's undervalued, and Deshaun Jackson, who's one of my late flyers this season. You could, again, that Eagles offense is very undervalued. You could do a lot of damage there as well. So those are the kind of ones I'm looking at.
There we go. Everyone, Mike Clay, at Mike Clay NFL, ESPN.com, ESPN Plus. You can find all his stuff. Mike, thank you for joining the show, man.
Yep, anytime. Take care.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.